thank you, James. We're now going to go ahead and start the Q&A session with the questions that have been typed online. I do encourage everybody to keep on putting in questions as we go through these. And once we go through them, if we still have time, we can open up the phone lines for questions. So I'm just going to start off at the top in the order that the questions came in. So Armin, the first question is for you, and I think you did partially answer it, but are you aware of similar efforts to address PM emissions for ships and ports in Canada and Mexico?
Yes, thanks for asking that question. As I mentioned, Canada does have the same standards, and they have adopted the ECA just like we have. And Canada usually follows all the regulations that the U.S., so we are in sync with Canada, and Canada's in sync with us. But Mexico is another matter. Mexico, because their fuel industry, Pemex is a state-owned company. There's a little bit behind. So I think they're working on it, but they're not there yet. So eventually, they will, I think. So I don't know that much more about the Mexico joining the ECA.
Thank you.
I hope that answers your question.
And if not, to the person who asked it, feel free to type in more to clarify, or if we get to the phone lines, you could ask over there. The next question is for Carter. Are trucks arriving from Mexico subjected to the same standards as trucks registered in the U.S.?
If a truck does come up, they have to register and could get a one-day pass, but eventually they'd be they started coming up regularly, they would be enrolled in the Clean Truck Program.
Thank you. The next question is for Armin. Why does the ECA not have the significant impact in the Northeast that it does along the rest of the coast, with New York being a major port?
That is a good question. I think another EPA worker mentioned it, and I think weather has a great impact on that because of weather conditions and the prevailing winds. But I think that's the major contributor. As you can see, there are impacts, maybe less than other areas, but it's weather related.
Thank you. And back to a question for Carter. How sensitive are the 2014 and 2023 reduction estimates to the cargo forecast? Are they updated when the cargo forecast is updated?
Those emission reduction estimates don't change. So in theory, we could actually meet those emission reduction goals with a low growth model, but the emissions estimates and the cargo forecast are done separately. So the next time we do a emission forecast, it will be the next time we update the cap, so we can kind of see where we are.
Thank you. And now a question for James. Where does CRT stand on the need for dray trucks to have company drivers, not owner-operators, to be clean trucks?
Thanks. That's a great question. We've developed our model in a way that can accommodate either independent owner-operators or employee drivers. Obviously, right now, both types of drivers are in the marketplace, and we feel strongly that whatever the employment status of the driver is, it's important to provide them with the financial tools and support that they need to get clean trucks on the road. We've developed kind of what we call the CRT financial model, and we often compare that to a three-legged stool, where the shipper, cargo owner, is one leg of the stool, the trucking company is the second leg, and then the driver, whether independent or employee, is the third leg of that stool. And we strongly believe that unless each of those players has a financial role in the support of the transition to new equipment, these clean truck programs aren't going to be economically sustainable over the long term. And so we really advocate and support the need for shippers to play a role in supporting financially their providers transition to cleaner equipment, even if they don't, even if the shipper, which is true in most cases, doesn't directly own that equipment. There are a number of models that exist where shippers are paying kind of a clean truck rate to their providers, where they're paying a premium to ensure that all of their cargo is moved with a clean truck. And that premium is then combined with the trucking company and allows for financial incentives to help bridge the cost of the new truck so it's not falling squarely on the shoulders of the drivers. We feel that that is a model that, you know, really has to have everyone's support in order to work and to be viable. We, you know, want to make sure that it's a model that works for all drivers that are involved in port drayage, and in order to do that, you know, it has to address both independents and employees.
Thank you. And James, I believe this question was for you as well. I noticed no clean truck programs listed for any of the Great Lakes ports. What is the status there?
Yeah, well, that is something that we very much intend to move forward on in the future. We really started, and CRT, you know, as I mentioned, although we represent many of the largest shippers in the industry, we're small in the number of the shippers and providers in the field. And so we've had to move at a somewhat measured pace, and what we've done is started with the interactions with the top 10 container ports by volume in the country. That are representative of the largest sources of emissions in the country through containerized trade. And as we have seen clean truck programs get well established, certainly on the West Coast, now New York, New Jersey, we've begun to focus on the Mid-Atlantic and Southeast. And our hope is that as we continue to move along and get these clean truck programs set up, we're really going to be looking at the Gulf of Mexico and the Great Lakes as the next regions that we want to really focus on.
Okay, thank you. And perhaps, Armin, I should give you an opportunity to address that question as well from the EPA standpoint.
I think James did a great job at explaining that. But, yes, we are, as James said, we did focus on the major ports. And as we go around to the smaller ones now, we do plan it, and it is, you know, cleaning up drayage trucks is very important, as I mentioned in one of my slides. It's a very cost-effective approach, so we will get to those eventually.
Thank you. James, I had a question for you come in that was sent directly to me, so you probably didn't see it, but can you name or direct us to a list of any shippers currently paying a clean truck premium so that we can encourage locally active shippers to do likewise?
All of the CRT members have support the CRT financial model as a best practice. All of the CRT members have committed to providing financial support to their drayage providers to help the transition to new equipment. Obviously, as folks are aware, any discussion of you know, actual rates that are being paid are something that is not the the purview of a trade association for obvious antitrust reasons. But as a best practice, it is something that all of our cargo owners endorse, and it's something that they negotiate directly with their service providers in each of the markets that they're involved in. And we are certainly trying to use CRT as a way to attract other shippers to adopt this as a best practice as well.
Thank you. Well, we still have plenty of time left, and that's all the questions I see typed in, so I do encourage you, if you think of additional questions, to type them in, but I'll also ask the operator to give instructions if you want to ask the question over the phone.
At this time, I'd like to remind everyone, in order to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. We'll pause for just a moment to compile the Q&A roster. There are no questions from the phone line.
Okay, thank you. Let's see, I think maybe one more just came in to me. Another one just was sent to me for you, James. Can you comment on whether truck bans aid or impair a voluntary program like CRTs?
That's a great question. The issue of truck bans is really something that is unique to each port community. CRT has supported truck bans in all of the communities, in all of the port areas that have adopted them. That is ports of LA and Long Beach, Oakland, Seattle, Tacoma, and New York, New Jersey. We believe that that can be a very effective tool in helping to transition the fleets into, especially for, you know, when you're talking about the pre-94 trucks, which seems to be the common denominator as truck bans get implemented. It's really trying to get the oldest and dirtiest trucks out of the drayage fleets at their respective ports. You know, it's always the old 80-20 rule. 20% of the trucks are, you know, create 80% of the pollution. So we believe that that is an important and effective tool for those ports who choose to use that tool, and we are supportive of that as a tool. You know, that said, every port is unique, and the needs of every port are quite diverse for a variety of reasons. The geography of the port, the air quality issues of the port, and also the political atmosphere at the ports. We know that there are some ports who prefer to explore a voluntary approach before a regulatory approach for a variety of reasons. And we are just as happy to partner with those ports to make sure that a voluntary approach has the best possible chance of succeeding. When we look at a voluntary approach versus a truck ban, you know, certainly there are some different challenges that we face in trying to really incentivize behavior. And that's probably the most powerful tool to transitioning the truck fleet is if we're going to take a purely voluntary approach, then we have to make sure that we have some incentives in place, financial incentives that help, you know, whether it's down payment assistance, whether it's low interest loans, whether it's a scrappage incentive to get the dirty trucks off the road. And then we're also really at this point exploring operational incentives, ways potentially that the port can administer a recognition program similar to what exists in Virginia right now with their Green Operator Program, where owner-operators or trucking companies and their employees who have deployed clean trucks can get recognition as a green operator and then also potentially benefit from some operational incentives. For instance, having gates that are dedicated for participants in a green operator program so that you can reduce the wait and the turn time for clean trucks, or potentially extended gate hours for green operators where you can afford the green operators a way to get an extra couple of turns per week to help them recoup their investment in the clean truck. You know, also encouraging through programs like SmartWay, our shippers, to encourage them to contract with participants in programs like SmartWay that have made a commitment to cleaning up their fleets and giving preference to the folks that are participating in that government program. So there are a lot of different tools that are available. Truck bans are one of those tools, a very important one, but we know it's not a perfect fit for every port. And so, you know, we believe that truck programs can be successful on a voluntary basis as well, and you know, we work with the port to try and get their air quality goals met, whether it's voluntary or mandatory.
Okay, thank you. Let's see, I don't believe, actually we have a question from Tony First, who's in the room with me.
Yeah, this is a question for Armin and for James. A lot of the conversation today has revolved around trucks and container ports. Can you talk to us a bit about what you're doing at some of the bulk ports, particularly in the area of marine diesel emissions?
Let me address that first. Thanks for that question, Bruce. Basically, we have a verification program similar to, you know, CARB, and we're trying to foster technologies to reduce the diesel emissions from marine and locomotive, which lacks some of the technologies right now because still the emission standards or the requirements are still far away. So we have two types of verification programs. One is where a technology manufacturer comes to us and say, here's a device, you can put it on a locomotive and can you please verify it? But of course, when they give us that information, we also ask them, you know, where's the data to be able to reduce it? And usually it takes some time to develop that and data and the testing for us to make sure that it's, as I mentioned, that it's reduces as much as they say it does, and also the durability of it. And sometimes that takes us several years to get to us. So we realize there are emerging technologies, which is another program we have in our verification program, where they can a technology manufacturer can come to us and say they have this device or strategy, and there has been idling reduction strategies and other devices that are put on locomotive switchers and gensets, and we're looking at those. And so the emerging technology is a little bit different in that the technology manufacturer comes to us and say, we have this idea, and please can you, and we have this testing program, but it's going to take 1 or 2 years, and we say, okay, you're on our emerging technology list. And the reason they want to be on that list is it makes them eligible for federal funding. They can combine or work with a public entity such as a port or other public entities or nonprofit organizations to apply for the grant money and use their technology. So that's the voluntary approach, trying to encourage the technology by funding or grant incentives to foster the technology. Remember, in locomotive and in marine, there aren't that many of them out there. So the research and development is a high amount compared to the number of sales they're going to get. And in the past, they haven't really focused on that technology because it was not a moneymaker. They basically, sold new technologies to new engines. So we're trying to foster a retrofit market, and that's through grant incentives.
Okay, thank you.
I think maybe Carter can add some more.
Yeah, on the tanker industry, it's difficult because the nature of that business. We've been focusing on our container fleet and crews because those vessels show up once a month or once a week. Mm-hmm. So there are returning customers. The bulk, the tankers. You may get, that vessel calling the port, one time a year, mm-hmm. Due to the, just the business model.
Mm-hmm.
The vessel could be calling Port LA one month and then, overseas, for the rest of the year. So, but that being said, we to help meet our goals and our standards, we're looking at, we have to, we'd like to do some sort of shore power equivalent to the non-regulated fleets. So that's anything that's not container, cruise, or reefer.
Yeah, and this is James. I'll kind of chime in. I think much along the same lines is that bulk is something that I think we intend to increase our focus on in the coming months and as a long-term goal. I think part of it supports a more kind of broad-scale approach to port activities as well that I think ties in really nicely to what the U.S. EPA is doing with regard to clean ports. And I think that, ultimately, we certainly don't want to limit ourselves by focusing solely on containerized traffic, that we know that opportunities exist for emissions reductions from additional types of cargo. The container traffic was our first objective in this effort, but it's certainly not our only objective. Much as, you know, we intend to continue working with additional ports around the country, we intend to hopefully bring some solutions to the table for that type of cargo as well.
Okay, thank you. Believe this question is for Armin. What are federal agencies like EPA doing to clean up freight train locomotives, including idling and railroads? And what's the role for state agencies involved in goods movement and air quality?
This is similar to the last question. As I mentioned, we're working on marine and locomotive technologies, and the regulations are there for new locomotives, but it's going to take some time. So in the interim, we have the verification program and grant voluntary programs to provide grant incentives to foster technologies in this area.
Okay. So you have two more questions that were sent to me. Also, another one for James. Can you comment on how shippers can best ensure that dray trucking logistics providers actually pass on clean truck premiums to contracted owner operators to help them afford and maintain cleaner trucks?
Yeah, this is James. So, that's a question that we've gotten often is how do you make sure if you're a shipper that is supporting the financially supporting the deployment of clean equipment, how do you make sure that financial support is reaching the owner of the equipment, if in the case of an independent owner operator who actually owns the truck? Really what we say is, and I think any shipper will tell you this as well, that is something that is enforced through the terms of the contracts with their providers. And I think if any shipper were to find out that their providers, that they're paying a premium to make sure that their cargo is moved with clean equipment, and it's not, that financial support is not being shared in the manner it's intended, that carrier isn't going to be working for that shipper for much longer. It's something that that carriers take very seriously. When you're dealing with some of these large shippers that move tremendous amounts of volume, it's something that is very strictly enforced by the shippers. And as I said, it is something that if there is if that premium is not being used in the way that it is intended, I can assure you that contract is not long for this world.
Okay, thank you. And now a question for Armin and Carter. How can environmental agencies, how can they best work with their transportation agency counterparts to identify and fund the best port-based projects? In some states, the state DOT's funding comfort line extends only as far as landside connections to ports, rather than that of cargo handling equipment and dock infrastructure to reduce vessel emissions. I guess the question is, how can environmental agencies and transportation agencies work together?
I think the first place to start would be doing an emissions inventory of the area and see what are the basically the low-hanging fruit. And we in our grant RFPs, request for proposals, ask for a cost effectiveness of the project. And if the port or the area has emission inventories and can assess which projects are the most cost effective, that and identify that to EPA, that would make it easier for them to do it, and they basically they need to coordinate among themselves what are the important projects, get the port or public entity an environmental group or something to propose the idea to EPA and suggest a project. I think that answers the question, but Carter, would you like to add
more?
Yeah,
just chime in. With the cap, that's kind of what we did. We we did an emissions inventory. We've been doing emissions inventory since I think going back to 2005, and we've been doing one every year. And so we've looked at our sources. In the 06 cap, we've identified control measures. Those are really whittled down from a list of 40 different measures down to a few measures per source category. I just like to highlight the vessel speed reduction, which is just the slowing of vessels, is extremely cost effective because you don't have to do any retrofits to the vessel. And now that's with the downturn in the economy worldwide, you've heard this term of slow steaming really creep up. So with these large vessels, you have direct drive engines, so there's a cubic relationship between engine power and speed. So you slow down, or fuel consumption and speed. So you slow down and you save not only on criteria pollutants, but also greenhouse gas. So.
Okay. Thank you. I don't see any other questions at this point right now. We do still have a few minutes left. I'll go ahead and start reading the ending information, but if any other questions come in, I can pause and read those out and go back to them. I do want to thank all three presenters for three great presentations today. As you could see by the number of questions that picked up after a while, I think we had a lot of interest in it and the topic area. And I also want to thank everybody for attending today's seminar. The recording from today will be available online within the next few weeks on the Talking Freight website, and I'll send out a notice when that's available. It will also include a transcript and the presentations. You can download the presentations from the bottom right corner of the screen right now, and actually you'll be able to go back into the website that you're on now and download them if you didn't get a chance to do it during the seminar at any point between now and the next seminar in June. And you basically just go log into the website the same way you did today. As a reminder, if you're an AICP member and want to receive 1.5 certification maintenance credits for today, please make sure you were either signed in with your first and last name, or if not, type your name into the chat box. As I mentioned, the seminar is not on the AICP website, but I'll send out an email once it is. For everybody in attendance, please download the evaluation form and send it back to me. We do want to make sure that these seminars continue to meet your needs. The next seminar will be held on June 15th and will be about a freight situational awareness topic. The seminar is not yet available for registration, but once we have a little bit more information on the topic and the presenters, I will open it for registration and send out a notice through the Freight Planning Listserv, which is our primary means of sharing information about upcoming seminars. So if you haven't already joined the listserv, I encourage you to do so, and the web address to do so is showing on your screen. Well, I didn't see any additional questions come in, so I think we're going to go ahead and close out for today. So thank you to Armin, Carter, and James, and thank you everybody for attending, and have a great rest of the day.